your sexy young.
You ready?
We are.
You ready?
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, our expert, joining us here on this Tuesday. It's been a while since we've talked to him on a Tuesday, but he is in demand on television. And boy, he was dead on right about his, you know, the shot behind him. We got the extra layer when we had him on our Zoom call when he joined us that you don't see on ESPN. So we got that extra shelf that you don't see on television. So we feel special.
The top shelf with Tim Hasselbeck.
Yeah. No, the wide angle is you got to be in the circle of trust to get the wide angle. And the wide angle is going to it's gonna show things the TV doesn't show, just to be honest.
Well, no, that was – it was in the shot, the NFL Europe helmet, right? That was
– Yeah, that one makes it – listen, you can't have the Berlin Thunder helmet not make TV. I mean – but everybody needs to see the Berlin Thunder helmet. No, I think, there's some, I think there's a wedding photo. I think there's a, look at this. This is a 2014 girls first grade flag football ball on the shelf that doesn't make it on SportsCenter.
Yeah. By the way, we had quite the combo on Friday. You at noon, Trent Dilfer at 1:00. Trent was in Omaha with his girls, one at Lipscomb, one at Louisville, and I think they were playing in what, the NCAA tournament, volleyball tournament?
For volleyball tournament, yes. In fact, earlier that day, I Lipscomb Academy football must have put something out on Twitter like, hey, you know, check out the Dilfer girls playing. And I read it wrong. So I thought it was like Louisville volleyball was playing Lipscomb University volleyball. And I was like, oh, now he has one of his daughters a little bit more intense than the other. And so I was like, hey, I hope so-and-so wins because otherwise that's going to be a tough, like that's going to be a tough family dinner afterwards. I thought they were playing each other. So which he responded and he was like, no, I would not be able to handle them playing each other. Like he's like, I think I would have a heart attack during the match.
Have you had to experience anything? I mean, that is like a parent's nightmare, right? I mean, kids squaring off against each other?
My only experience with that is this, okay? I was with the Giants. We were playing the Seahawks. You guys may remember the game. Like, the Giants, we jumped off sides like 15 times. And Jay Feely was our kicker. He missed, I'm not exaggerating, I think he missed 5 field goals in the game. So it's like this crazy game. Giants out at the Seahawks. Well, the night before the game, you know, we all kind of get together as a family. You know, me and my brothers, my parents are there. Brought my grandmother into town. And, you know, the whole idea was like my parents were like, well, we're going to cheer for the offense. Well, the game gets tight and goes into overtime. And next thing you know, the Seahawks are, like, battling back and – like Eli throws a pick or something, and I look over to where my family is sitting, and everyone's like high-fiving each other and stuff. I was like, hold up a second.
Hey.
What was that all that? Like, hey, we're going to cheer for the offense stuff, yeah?
We had Dan Shanka on last hour, and we were talking about it seems pretty uneventful for the first two picks, but San Francisco gave up a haul. They clearly know who they want at 3. But it seems like everybody's all over the place, Tim, about what the 49ers are going to do at 3. So what's your intel telling us? What do you think they're going to do at 3? Because they know. I just feel like, you know, but everybody else is kind of trying to throw darts to figure out who it is.
Yeah. Well, so I think you're right in that they know. You know, there's been a lot of this talk about you know, why are they doing this at Trey Lance's workout if they know they're taking Mac Jones, and you know, they're still deciding. Like, you don't do what they did, to your point, and move all the way up there if you don't know exactly what you're doing. Now, I think there's probably a reason to, you know, not necessarily give away what you're doing. But I also think this, like, just take this as an example. If you represent Trey Lance, okay, and the 49ers, you know, want to you know, you to work out, and they want you to work out with a specific coach that you're not working out with, which is what happened yesterday. And they're not going to take you. You don't do it. Like, why are you going to go work out? John Beck or Jay, one of the Beck brothers, who was the quarterback trainer that Kyle Shanahan wanted Trey Lance to work out with. You don't do it if they're not going to potentially draft you. So I just think there's something there. To me, it doesn't make sense. I think Mac Jones is a good prospect. You've heard me talk about Mac Jones. I would not draft him in the first round because I think there's athletic deficiencies there that, you know, would kind of disqualify him from being a first-round draft pick. You know, Trey Lance doesn't have those kind of issues. He is a little bit more of a project, but he's got all the tools. I just think that that 49ers pick is either Fields or Lance. I actually don't believe that it's Mac Jones.
Interesting. So I'm going to ask you what your thoughts are on this, because we see this all the time, and it's not fair just to pigeonhole Trey Lance with this because he played at North Dakota State, because sometimes at the Power Five schools, they've got such athletic players that, you know, you see the same film on them. But I brought up yesterday on the show, Tim, that I've seen, you know, I don't watch film like you or others, but the clips that I've seen, and I've seen quite a bit of Trey Lance, it seems like he's always throwing to wide open guys. Like, how do you truly evaluate? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see him make the tight throws. I want to see him throw somebody open, right? I feel like I'm not seeing those, and I'm not saying they don't exist. But when that happens, when you see a lot of film on a kid where, for whatever reason, why it was happening, but he's just constantly throwing to guys that he's never going to see at the NFL level. Guys like that are never going to be open. How do you truly evaluate them?
It makes it really hard, and so I think there's fool's gold when watching tape, and I think it's one of the reasons it's hard to evaluate quarterbacks. Trey Lance is a great example. You're exactly right about guys running free and wide open. People need to understand that North Dakota State is the Alabama of that league, okay? Like, that's who they are. They are a juggernaut, and they dominate it. They dominated it with Carson Wentz. They dominated it with Easton Stick, who's with the Chargers, and they dominated it with Trey Lance. Like, they are the Alabama of that, you know, that division, okay? Well, so when you watch some of that stuff, yes, he's got guys running free. Kind of a similar thing with Wentz, because, look, they're doing a good job. They have better players, and they're well coached. And, you know, on top of that, some of the plays that you see where he's, you know, running with the football, it's because there was a mistake, you know, a mental mistake, missing a pass protection issue, and he's just bigger, stronger, faster that he's running through guys, you know. Like, we ran, you know, some highlights yesterday on SportsCenter, and they were against UC Davis, Montana State, and some other school that I forget. Well, I mean, we're not going to hear those schools called a lot, you know, during the draft. We're just, or at all. So, yeah, that's a problem. But equally as difficult, Darren, I would tell you is this. When you watch Mac Jones, watch him throw a bubble against Notre Dame, a really good team, and it's not even blocked correctly, and it goes 35 yards for a score. Or watch him throw an RPO and he throws an inside slant, and one of those wide receivers takes it 40 yards for a touchdown. Like, there's fool's gold at every level, and sorting through it is really hard.
Okay, I've made it well known on this show, and I know I've brought it up with you many times, but I want to get your perspective because you've played both roles. You've been a starter, you've been the backup, so you understand the importance of both. And I just want you to tell me, concerned, not concerned. I've harped for years whenever I feel like the Titans don't have an adequate backup, like how big of a mistake that is. And, you know, when I was excited when they got Ryan Tannehill, just because I thought, man, that is the best backup that they've had in a good while, and we know how that's all played out. Here they sit with Logan Woodside and DeShone Kizer. I understand if Ryan Tannehill plays 17 games, like he played 16 last year, it's a complete non-issue. Like, I get that. But if he misses a month, like, are you comfortable – with those guys as your backups going into a season and knowing if Tannehill has to miss any sort of time, that those guys, whether it's Logan Woodside, I'm assuming it would be Woodside as the backup, as the two, are you comfortable with him going out there and getting you wins, let's say in a tight race when you're battling the Colts for a division?
I would say this. I think that I think Logan Woodside is a guy whose physical ability is really good. Like, I think there are guys that, you know, are playing, you know, starters that may, he physically is as talented or more talented than, which is why I think that even without, like, his past, you know, that he's lasted the way that he has. You know, Hundley's a tricky one for me because I think there's potential there, but yet he just has played poorly whenever he's been given the opportunity. So, look, I like the idea that, you know, you're not just kind of handing it to Logan Woodside. You know, do I think that you could maybe find, you know, more competition there? Yeah, I think you probably could. You know, all of that to say, you know, like, well, how do you go find the guy that you're interested in that you're talking about? You know, like, how do you go figure out who that is that you would, you know, that you would want to pay? Like, what? I guess here should be the question: how much money do you want to pay your backup?
Yeah, that's the
key,
right? The budget.
Bucks a year?
What are you budgeting?
Do you want to pay him $5 million a year? Like, what is it? Like,
that's a good question.
He's asking you, Darren. He's asking you the same thing I always ask you because you say that you bring the same thing up, but that is such a huge part of it, right?
I understand. Well, at the time they had, you know, they got, and I understand they got a sweetheart deal from Miami, but you know, I said initially several, I guess it would be a month or two ago, I said I would kick the tires on Alex Smith and see where his head is at. Obviously, that is out of the picture now.
His head is gone.
As we learned yesterday, his head is out of the game. He's retiring. But I said I would ask the guy, hey, are you cool coming here and being a backup? And I don't have any clue about the answer. This was, you know, a month and a half ago. But somebody like that with that experience, to me, would have been a perfect fit for the right price. And I understand the price is the question. And I don't know what the right
price
would have been
those
with him.
Guys, yeah, the price on those guys, I think, is well north of $5 million. And I think that, you know, you can look at a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, their backup is Blaine Gabbert, you know. And so, like, I think the reality is like, once you get into, like, the, you know, guys you can get your hands on that you're not paying elite backup money to, because I don't think you want to, based on Tannehill's age, general health, you know, all of that stuff. Like, I don't think you want to get outside the Nick Mullins, Josh Dobbs, Brian Hoyer, like, world. I don't think you do. And so, Matt Barkley, for that matter. Like, I don't think you want to get outside of that. And I think that that's kind of exactly where you sit with, you know, the guys that they have.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, your thoughts on the Steelers' decision to extend Mike Tomlin? I guess we shouldn't be surprised. They've had, what, three coaches in about 100 years, the Steelers? But this did you see this coming?
No, I can't say I saw it coming, but I think my reaction would kind of be like yours there, Willie, where it's like, well, what do we think? It's the Steelers. Like, you know, of course. And I think sometimes even with good coaches, you know, there comes a time where you need change and different scenery and stuff like that. I don't think that that's where the Steelers are. I think he's a good coach. I think he's well respected by the players. He's certainly well respected by other coaches around the league. And sometimes you got to ask yourself, like, all right, well, if Mike Tomlin were available, would there be multiple opportunities for him? And the answer to that is yes. And so if that's the case, I just think that, you know, even though that team is probably going through some turnover, and it's going to be turnover that goes beyond this year, I think it does make a lot of sense for them.
You know, as I read the daily stuff on Deshaun Watson, I'm just trying to think from the perspective of the Texans as they get ready for the draft. I guess they're trying to get as much clarity as they can before the draft actually starts, but probably thinking they're not going to know the full picture here. So what do you think this does to how they approach the draft?
I mean, I think it's I think that it basically, I think how to say this, I mean, I think that it basically totally hamstrings them on anything they can do. I mean, you could go from, you know, everything's fine, he's at training camp, he's your starting quarterback, right, to he never plays another snap in the NFL. Like, you literally could have that type of swing with that situation. So you're either building around a guy that is, you know, easily a top 10 quarterback to completely restarting at the position. So I think it is an impossible situation because you don't know the outcome and you're not going to know the outcome. And I quite honestly don't know how you handle it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think that, and that all of what you said is separate from the whole dispute that was going on, right? With I don't want to play there anymore. Like
totally
that's
separate.
It's like a second
totally
layer,
separate.
Right?
Hey, when's the last time we heard about that?
Right?
When's the last time that we heard that you know Cal McNair lied to Deshaun Watson? You know, and that he's going to sit the year out and not show up to training camp. The last time we heard that. So, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. You can't take that position now if you're Deshaun Watson. Now, honestly, you just hope that you can go back to the Texans.
I always am curious of what you hear about what the Patriots are doing. They've always fascinated us, right? Here they are in sort of a different situation than they've been in years, but you know the wheels are turning. You know they've got a plan. It's been a little interesting, you know. Bringing with Cam Newton, everybody's wondering, is he going to be the quarterback against? What do you think is happening? What do you think the philosophy is with the Patriots? Do you feel like they think they can win next year and get back to being a playoff team? Say,
I mean, I have to think they believe that they can. The Cam Newton thing surprises me. I was wrong about how well I thought that he would play. I mean, this is a passing league. He was terrible passing the football a year ago. I mean, just there's really no other way around it. Now, I'm sure they feel like they got better. Between N'Keal Harry being a year older and Kendrick Bourne and Nelson Aguilar and guys like that. They did get a bunch of guys that were opt-outs from a year ago coming back. So I do think that they probably feel like their roster this time of year versus when guys were opting out, you know, roughly a year ago is better. But quarterback's important. And if Cam Newton is the answer, which his contract states that basically he is not, but if that ends up what they're doing, I just have to say I don't feel great about that happening. And I know a lot of people have linked them to quarterbacks, and I think that could easily make sense. And, you know, I may change how I feel about the prospects of the direction of that franchise if for some reason they end up with Justin Fields.
Justin Fields, that would be interesting. Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us usually on Wednesdays, but at 1 o'clock here on a Tuesday today. So sticking with the quarterback theme, I think we'd all agree that Josh Allen of any quarterback last year took the biggest leap just across the board with what he was able to do getting his team to the AFC title game. You can make the argument the year before it was Ryan Tannehill right here in Nashville with the Titans. In your mind, and it's a broad question, but who has the biggest opportunity to be this year's Josh Allen or Ryan Tannehill?
I think on the Ryan Tannehill front, you've heard people kind of, talk about Sam Darnold as a guy that, you know, can take a huge, you know, leap just because of, you know, the environment that he's in. So I think that, you know, for a Tannehill example of a guy with change of scenery and how significant that is, I think that could be Darnold. For a young guy who, you know, maybe just plays better, you know, a little bit more along the lines of Josh Allen. I think, you know, there'd maybe be an element for me that would feel like, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Drew Locke. I think there's a lot of talent around him. Now, I think there's a chance that they find him some legitimate competition in this draft. But if it's not too early and he can kind of fight his way through it, I could see him as a guy who, you know, I think people are lukewarm on at best, that could take a big jump.
Okay, so second or third year guys that you look could, and it doesn't have to be, you know, someone that's been bad necessarily, but, you know, has been average and they're just kind of working their way up. So a second or third year guy, how would you answer that question of who could make the biggest leap?
Well, I mean, I don't think Kyler Murray's been bad, but
no.
So he's, you know, so like he would be a guy that I feel like, you know, I said a year ago that I thought he was kind of, you know, a off the radar, you know, an NFL MVP type of player. Like he could be that. So, you know, I think Kyler Murray would be a guy that, you know, I would say. So I guess, so we're going the last 2 years essentially. Look, I think I'm going to be interested to see what Joe Burrow looks like. You know, it seems like we didn't get a chance to see a ton of him. You know, obviously the injury and coming back from it, he was so mobile, kind of slippery, and you know, kind of, you know, had good escapability and that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. But I think sometimes we forget about guys if they're out for a little bit because of an injury. We forget, like, look, he was the number one overall pick for a very good reason.
Is there a quarterback in – you guys were talking about backups earlier. So is there a quarterback in this draft that you could see, you know, in the mid-rounds, later rounds, that's not getting a lot of hype, but you've seen enough to make you think, okay, that's somebody that – I could trust you develop into a backup quarterback, maybe not necessarily right away, but is there someone that stands out to you that you like from that aspect?
So I think that Jamie Newman is really interesting. Here's the deal. He was a starter at Wake Forest. He was essentially a completely raw prospect when he came to Wake Forest. He's about 6'3", 235. He's a very good runner with the football. You know, super strong, more strong than fast, but he's a very good runner. He throws an excellent deep ball. He's got great accuracy. I think he's very good. Now, he played in this unique offense at Wake Forest. It's like heavy RPO offense, and so it's a little unique. Well, then he transfers to Georgia, basically gets beat out at Georgia, and then opts out for the season. Had he stayed at Wake Forest and had a monster year, which I think he would have had, I think people would be talking about him as a fringe first-round pick. Now, he won't go in the first round, and so he's going to be a later-round pick, and who knows what his opportunity will be. But he, in some ways, to me, is a version of, you know, Trey Lance or Justin Fields, but maybe not as athletic. But he's played a good amount of football, and I think he can actually be a pretty good player if, you know, kind of in the right situation and you put the right work in to help him kind of get better at things that he hasn't done a whole lot of.
Interesting. That sounds like a bad decision then.
So he should have stayed in the closet.
Should have stayed.
Well, no, and seriously, but I think this, you're at Wake Forest, you're playing in front of like 15,000 people. The people you're playing against all have better players than you have. And because of the transfer portal thing, it's like, look, I've kind of accomplished what I feel like I needed to here. Like, what if I go to Georgia, who's desperate for a quarterback? Well, you go there, and it's this weird year, and now you're playing under center some, and, you know, they get another transfer, and maybe you're just like, wait a second, I might get beat out. That's not going to be good. Mm. So we kind of get saved by the opt-out, you know, rule because of COVID, And so opting out probably was better than getting beat out, but, you know, sometimes the grass isn't always greener.
Oh, well, I bet Willie just perked up here at that.
Uh-huh. See?
I was way right.
See, Tim and I think are on the same wavelength on this whole thing. I just don't like the free-for-all transfer direction that everything's
going.
Well,
listen, buckle up because
I know
it's only getting worse.
College basketball is a mess with this.
Listen, it's bad. Look, I think that it's Listen, if a guy's in a bad situation, coach leaves or whatever, look, I get it for the player. But I see it as bad for the player and for the coaches. I know that college coaches, they're part of the reason they're working the portal so hard is because they think that they're like, look, we're going to lose guys that we don't think we're going to lose. Like we have guys that enter the portal that were like, why are you going? Like, we're expecting you to play literally, 80% of the offensive snaps this year. Why are you going somewhere else?
I'm curious to see how it changes recruiting because, coaches are going
to promise. You're going to have recruiters on your staff to re-recruit your players.
Yeah.
Like that center on that and people that are recruiting high school players. It might be just as important to keep your guys in the stable.
Hey, I'll give you a good one. Remember Kendall Hinton, who started the game for the Broncos this past year?
Mm-hmm.
At quarterback, but he's really a receiver. Well, it kind of made me think of it because of Wake Forest.
You mean when all the quarterbacks were hanging out together and all got...
Yeah, correct. Well, he entered the transfer portal when he was at Wake Forest because he was playing in the slot, this and that. Well, Dave Clawson, their coach, said to his mom, he's like, look, I don't understand he transferred the portal, but this is the best place for him, and quite honestly, I think he's going to end up being back here. Well, sure enough, he kind of enters the portal, doesn't find a spot, ends up being back there, and look, still found his way to the NFL because in that offense, playing in the slot with kind of a quarterback mindset, being a former quarterback, was great for him. Had he transferred to somewhere else, like, that might have been it. So, I do think it's an I'm with you on that, Willie.
Tim, always appreciate it. You have a great rest of your day, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Cool. See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, our expert here, joining us today on a Tuesday. He's got some TV conflicts for tomorrow. Typically, it's Wednesdays at noon. Masvidal and Usman, they put on a show the last time, and when they stepped in the octagon, they're going to do it again. DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, is putting you in the center of this weekend's title fight. Yes, pick either main event fighter to win this weekend's UFC 261 title fight, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 26-1 odds. You just bet $5 of your money on either fighter to win, and if they walk away with the belt, you cash $130. Not bad, huh? There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is, and all you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, turn $5 into $130 if the title contender of your choice wins. That code again, 1025GAME. This is, of course, for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.